Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Tennessee dominated Saturday, and there are three reasons to pay attention to that team going forward. Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday, and I hope everybody is having a glorious existence, and I mean that. And the part about I hope you're having a great day, I mean, yeah, that too. I'm going back to the first thing I said. Tennessee didn't win on Saturday. A buddy of mine's a Vols fan. Saw him yesterday. We looked good yesterday. I wanted to take a big picture. I was like, you didn't look good. You didn't win. We didn't beat the Gators. You dominated Florida. In a game where I don't think it is a stretch to say Anthony Richardson, the South Florida thing last year, 2021, okay, that was something. Beyond that, which was a snapshot into what might be possible for Anthony Richardson, beyond the South Florida thing last year, Anthony Richardson had never played better in a college game than he did Saturday. And I'm talking level of competition. I'm talking environment on the road, SEC, division game, all that. Anthony Richardson, to this point of his Florida Gators career, best he's ever been. Hendon Hooker won the day, and it wasn't even close. Anthony Richardson is this big, giant, strong, fast quarterback, not just athlete or player. He's a quarterback, and he's got a lot of improving to do and a lot of staying calm to do and a lot of accuracy to him. He's a young quarterback who started like five games. I think it's five games. Hendon Hooker, he's the Jets quarterback already. He could be Seattle's quarterback. He could be, I don't know, Minnesota's quarterback. They're kind of done. Dan, are they done with Kirk Cousins? Kind of?
Yeah, pretty much. Who isn't?
He's the Vikings quarterback. He already is all of that. Now, that's just a projection and a comment. I tell you all the time, I'm not necessarily concerned with what you become on Sundays. I hope you get some game checks and maybe even a pension. I think it's if you play three seasons, four games, I believe, gives you service time for a season. It used to be four. Maybe it's more. They've added games. So three seasons and four games, you have four full years, and you've got a pension there at that point. So I hope he gets it. At least that's what it used to be. I don't know if they've changed that. But whether that happens for Hendon Hooker or not, do you know what I saw on Saturday? I saw as good a player as there is in college football. Now, he lost a fumble, and that was really unusual because do you know what Hendon Hooker, more than anything, Hendon Hooker does? Refuses to turn the ball over. And when I say he was better the other day, Anthony Richardson lost a fumble too, and he threw a pick. 453 yards through the air and 62 yards rushing for Anthony Richardson and four scores. Tennessee gets the win 38-33, and there were some big plays, and there was a shot at least towards the end zone at the end from Anthony Richardson. I give you all those numbers just to put in context how great Hendon Hooker's day was. He goes for 349, pair of touchdowns, no interceptions. He ran for 112 yards and a score, and it was 13 carries. It wasn't like – No disrespect at all, and I mean, this would be an obvious thing. Matt Corral, that was last year or 2 years ago when he went up to Rocky Top. Oh, that was last year, and he had the 30 or 31 carries. Hendon Hooker carried the ball 13 times. So Tennessee got it done offensively, and we sort of expected that, and it's against a defense that can make some plays. When I'm talking about Hendon Hooker and Anthony Richardson, folks, that is just the tip of the spear. I started the show by saying Tennessee, a buddy of mine, hey, we got the dub. I was like, dude, you dominated them. Do not sell yourself short. And he's big time, chest out, you know, orange creamsicle. He's got the overalls and all of it. They dominated Florida. and I have proper context. Bama didn't go rolling into Knoxville and Tennessee won 38-33. Florida came in. So what is Florida? Florida's a well-coached team, I believe. I don't know that they have received it all yet, but the instruction is great. It's just that there's so many new players and new coaches to these players, and so it's just it takes a minute no matter who. It'd be Lombardi back from the grave, and it's going to take a minute. So you have a well-coached team, but it just hadn't all taken yet. You've got a talented team, as in they're big and strong and they can run fast. Tennessee's better. And Tennessee was a lot better. And I'm talking about the distinction between being better and being good. Defensively, I don't know that Tennessee's good yet. They're a brand of better. They played with some confidence the other day, which was interesting to see. And they have some players that you watch them from play to play, and you're like, all right, he's not a perfect player, but by golly, you know, they're getting there. And you'll see a kid like Haddon. He'll make a big-time blow-up play, and then he'll get beat. And so it just kind of happens because that's what happens in football. When you're Alabama, did you see the play Will Anderson made against A.J. Swan, the Vanderbilt quarterback? Just an unbelievable play in the backfield against a kid who thought, I don't know what I'm going to outrun Will Anderson. No. See, Will Anderson doesn't have that EKG sort of performance. Tennessee still has their players on defense. They still have a little bit of that, which is why it wasn't 38-0 or 38-10. It was 38-33. It's why Anthony Richardson got a touchdown late. Or Florida got a touchdown late and then recovered the onside kick. And Anthony Richardson had, at least in the direction of the end zone because he got hit. And it turned into that interception. But Tennessee is playing a brand of improved defense. Now, I said there are three particular reasons you're going to pay attention to Tennessee going forward. It's actually three particular days. I am talking about offenses that are going to test Tennessee. We're going to find out what they really are because Ball State wasn't going to push Tennessee and Akron wasn't going to push Tennessee at Pitt in that game. Tennessee got pushed, and you know what Tennessee did? First of all, they knocked out the Pitt quarterback, which fine enough play for me. That was more on Pat Narduzzi than anything Tennessee did. But I'm saying as far as like a dirty hit. But they gave up some huge plays, made big plays as well. Gave up some huge plays to Pitt, who is a good program in a good enough conference. And Tennessee was on the road, and they gave up 27. What is the goal at Tennessee? See, this is where I'm taking this conversation. If your goal really is to be a player, not ER player, like player in the East, it's going to be on your deep. The offense, I got you figured out, man. And if your defense can play better, your offense will actually have more opportunities. So there's that. To this point, like I said, Ball State and Akron, I wasn't going to find out a whole lot. Pitt, yeah, a little bit. Florida, I found out. Because Florida has some elite talent at the right positions. And so you got pushed, and you could have lost that game. So it's not Will Anderson, and it's not the Alabama defense, not Dallas Turner and all the rest of them. But they're playing a brand of improved defense. They're at LSU. They got this Saturday off and then at LSU. Dan, I have an observation about Kayshon Boutte.
Share some observations.
I'm about ready for him to start having a Kayshon Boutte season. Now, I know that in the first game there were some drops and he got frustrated. And then they were having a baby on Saturday. So, and then they played Southern. And how much do you really need to unwind Boutte against Southern? I get all of it. All right, the first month of the season is gone. I would like to see Kayshon Boutte start having a Kayshon Boutte season.
Well, you're not the only one. And another guy, too, is Jack Besh. So much to the point.
Oh, you're right.
They put him back there to return punts on Saturday just to get him going. The head coach even making a point last week and saying, yeah, we got to get more than two catches to that guy.
All right, so I am talking about one of the elite players in America in Kayshon Boutte. And he's got 10 catches for 93 yards, has not seen the end zone, and his team has played four games. So when I talk about the three reasons, actually the three times the three games, the three opponents, where you're going to find out everything you need to know about Tennessee, and I mean for real, real. LSU is not one of them, not yet. LSU can put up a good number, but I don't know how that game's going to go in 2 weeks, and I don't know what kind of season Butte's having. I don't know if Kane's now fully immersed, and maybe the running game is going to look like it looked. There are challenges, but right now I don't think anybody would look at LSU's offense and say, yeah, it's humming right along. It's an elite offense. When you have a quarterback who can be as – it's like Florida State and Jordan Travis. When you have a quarterback who can be as inconsistent and with his accuracy, then there is a cap on what I'm going to call your offense, because you could have a day where you're 17 for 40. And I'm wondering why you called that many pat, but it's college football, so that maybe that's what you do. And so the LSU offense, still to be determined. After that, Tennessee's got Bama, Kentucky, and Georgia, 3 out of 4 weeks. They're your offenses. They're going to find out how Tennessee – outside of the Tennessee Vols offense, Bama, and yeah, I'm including Kentucky. They're getting even more fun, folks. Bama, Kentucky, and Georgia. Those three opponents over the course of 4 Saturdays, that will determine what your defense is, which will determine your season. Now, as far as – do you notice what I haven't talked about yet? Winning those games. They can beat Kentucky, and it's at home, and that matters. They can beat Alabama or Georgia. I'm going to pause and put a comma, I suppose. Did I soft sell that enough? But I'm not expecting to, and it is revealing that my measuring stick still isn't, and hey, baby, Tennessee, rise up, win the East. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about finding out about their defense. So Saturday at home against a really good opponent who's well-coached and has some elite offensive players. Defense gave up some plays, and I get it. Anthony Richardson, man, he was spinning gold. But that defense really is better. And if you're playing an improved brand of defense – and your offense continues to hum along, folks, you got a bye week. Then you're at LSU, and that ain't no prize, but still, it's winnable. Then your season gets determined. Then it turns out to be whatever it is. And only one of those is on the road. So at least there's interesting football. And Tennessee, this is one thing. I'm not a Tennessee fan or a Florida fan, but I'm going to tell you, now that the game is done, what I am happy for is that Tennessee's fan base was able to get the entire first month of the season, at least, as the carryover from the excitement from the previous year. Remember with Jeremy Pruitt, that did not happen. Didn't they wind up with, like, they had maybe the second longest winning streak in the SEC after they finished the season, beat Indiana in that bowl game, and then the beginning of the next year. And I was like, okay, well, this dissipated pretty quickly. Tennessee's fan base, still riding a wave.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Devin Achane, one of the best football players in America. And if you didn't know that and you have watched Texas A&M just the past few weeks, you would really know that. Jimbo Fisher, I mean, folks, it's legit. I got to know him a little bit, like way, way, way back in the 100 million years ago when he was at Auburn. It's real what he does with his offense. It ain't good right now. Against App State, I believe Devin Achane was the offense. He was a handoff for a touchdown and a return for a touchdown, and that was kind of the offense. Against Miami, again, yeoman's work. Against Arkansas, wow. Tiny little guy, looked at 84 kids, said, jump on my back, we're going to do some stuff. He's just an amazing player. I want to welcome on right now, good friend of the program. He was there. He watched it all unfold. He is the old guy at texags.com, and that's according to him. Olin Buchanan, how are you, brother?
It's true. The old guy. I got to own it, but I'm doing well. I'm still here.
Oh, yeah.
After last week, so.
I've said that the progress is when you go from the actual number of candles to just one candle on the cake. They just let you. I blow out the one candle now, and I'm good. Let's talk about Devin Achane, because the offense has not been so super-duper, but that kid, I tell you what, he is maybe the tiniest Aggie of all, but he's the best player on the field almost every time he steps on the field.
Yeah, he really is special. It's a shame that he hasn't gotten much help from his offensive line or his offense in general. Opponents have been able to key on him, and I guess against Arkansas, the offensive line has been making gradual progress, and they took a good step forward, and got him a couple of holes, and he knows what to do with it. You know, the game was everything was going wrong for A&M. They started the game with four consecutive three and outs, and then he busted off about a 63, 65-yard run, and that led to them getting a touchdown. And he scored another touchdown, and he's like a little stick of dynamite. But unfortunately, the offensive line up till now has usually been a wet fuse. So if they can give him any help at all, you know, he could have been a Heisman contender given any help at all. As it is, he's just pretty much the A&M offense at this point.
Oh, yeah, he's a bantamweight swinging at the heavy bag, man, and he is making Conte. He's having a really great season to this point. Tell me about Anaya Smith, first of all, because I think I saw even his daddy on the sidelines the other night. What's his health status?
He is out for the year. We don't know the exact thing. I heard it was a high ankle sprain. Then I've heard it was a broken ankle or something like that. So haven't heard anything officially other than that he's out for the year. We'll find that out in about 3 hours when Jimbo has his press conference. But that's a huge loss. He's the second best player on that A&M offense that hasn't moved the ball consistently. So when you move him from the equation, they're going to need Devon Achane even more, because Anias is not just the guy that makes plays. He's not just productive, but he's that guy that is, the term leader is so overused, but he's everything you want in a teammate. He's a guy that gets excited when someone else does something. And when you need a big play at a key time, you know, he's the guy they usually look to. You know, they had a second and 30 the other night, and they threw 15 yards to him. He turned it into a first down.
Yep.
So that's the kind of guy he is. And when he got hurt, he was blocking downfield and got rolled up on. So that's, again, an example of, you know, he does everything. So that's a huge loss.
Evan Stewart is a stud freshman. I think he was spring game MVP, but he's a freshman, so that means he's got skill and talent, but he's inexperienced, so sometimes he looks like a freshman. They've got a bunch of tight ends they're starting to work in, but let's start, and we'll talk about all that, but let's start at quarterback with Max Johnson. I have had a difficult time evaluating him because something you brought up already, the offensive line, but then the suspensions at wide receiver, and then last week, and then, as you said, just that whole environment, how they started. I don't know how well he is playing so far. What's your opinion?
He's been efficient. The first thing that Max has done, and this is can be overstated here in College Station, is he hadn't been making mistakes. He hadn't had turnovers. He hadn't
absolutely
balls where they don't need to be. He's just taking care of the ball and managing the game, and that's been a problem here. So no interceptions, no turnovers the last two games, two close wins. He hadn't been helping out the other team. He could have had a pretty nice statistical game the other day, but penalties. There was a drop pass. It was he had a guy wide open for what would have been a 61-yard touchdown, and Chuck, the guy stopped running.
Oh, absolutely!
The ball in the air. He stopped running.
Yep. And he heard it from Max too, didn't he?
Yeah, and he needed to hear it. Yep. He needed to hear it from everybody. Yep. Why do you stop running on a play? And then he tried to recuperate and jump up for it, but it was over his head. If it just kept running, you know, he's going to hit him in stride. It's going to be an easy touchdown. So. So it's not just Max. You know, against Miami, we counted five drops. He only threw – he completed 10 of 20. We counted five drops. And even one of them was by A-Chain, which is unusual. So he's not a world beater by any means, but right now he's taking care of the ball. He has scrambled effectively. He's just – You know, the term game manager, maybe that's overused too, but in this case, it's exactly what he is, and he's managed it pretty well.
Texas A&M gets the dub, wrapping up with Olin Buchanan, our man at TexAgs.com. All right, I'm going to admit something here. I was watching. Actually, I watched every game they played this year except the opener against Sam Houston. Chris Russell, I couldn't tell you one play he's made. Has he decided he wants to have a bang-up final season there? What a good ball player he looks like. Has he been covering kicks? What's he done?
In the past, he's covered kicks and played just here and there. Maybe in blowouts, he played. They've had an injury. Their starting inside linebacker, Andre White, got hurt in the first game. Yep. Chris started against Miami, and I thought he looked lost. I thought not it wasn't just him, but he was definitely part of it. I thought it was some of the worst linebacker play I've seen in all my years covering Texas A&M. Guys didn't know how to fill a hole, couldn't diagnose a play, and the difference he made from that game to the Arkansas game was just a polar opposite. The guy went out and played as good a game as you'll see a guy have at linebacker. He had 10 tackles. He had a sack. He forced a fumble that was returned for a touchdown. He almost had an interception.
Yep.
If the ball would have been thrown accurately, he would have had an interception. So all I can say is they hope that that's the old TV show, it's called, they say, "Will the real so-and-so please stand up?"
Oh, yeah.
That's the real. They're hoping that's the real Chris Marshall. Chris Russell. That's how bad it is. He's getting even the wrong name. They're hoping that he's the real Chris Russell, and that they can get something similar to that every game from here on in. That would be a huge boost to the A&M defense because, quite frankly, the linebacker play is where there's the most concern.
Well, Olin, I appreciate you making some time today, brother. It's a great win up yonder in Dallas. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, thanks, Chuck.
Olin Buchanan from TexAgs.com, and a kid who had not ever had a moment just exploded the other night and was a big part of why that didn't get really, really sideways early on the Aggies. And we're able to get – and he's going to be in the starting lineup now going forward, so he's a senior getting his shot now.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olson.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. College football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year. It's always college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Georgia Tech's looking for a new head coach. They joined Dan. Arizona State, Nebraska, Georgia Tech. Am I missing anybody? I think them's the three. And Power Five.
Yeah. There was a chance we could have had somebody else if it didn't go their way on Saturday, supposedly.
So, we got three right now. And there has been some wicked math at work for Georgia Tech football. Turns out, had more money than they realized. Georgia Tech has paid almost $6 million per year for its head coach. Without getting a $6 million per year head coach, that is the financial math of if you take all the paychecks he has already received, Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, fired this morning. If you take all the paychecks he has received to this point and you add it to the buyout that he will get spread out over time and then divide by almost four seasons, It's about $6 million a year for Georgia Tech. And if you would have told a Georgia Tech fan or administrator back in 2019, you're going to pay $6 million a year for your head coach, they would have said, we can't afford that. Well, brother, you went cheap, and that's what you wound up paying. So now he's out. Jeff Collins is out. The athletic director, Todd Stansberry, who I know personally, is a good guy. And he's a graduate there, former player. He's fired as well. Want to welcome on now from JacketsOnline.com. That is his deal, man. He's the publisher. He's the writer there. Kelly Quinlan, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. It's been a long couple of days, that's for sure.
Yeah, this has not struck you by surprise. I see you on Twitter, and you had been dropping breadcrumbs and then just got blatant about it. And what was the bar going into Saturday in Orlando for Georgia Tech? They lose to UCF 27-10. It was a horrid performance everywhere except, like, between the 20s for the offense. What was the expectation or the bar? What would have had to happen for Jeff Collins to still be head coach at Georgia Tech? Was it bottom line if they lose by 1 point, or was it the way they lost?
I think it was the way they lost, and this has just been building up and building up. And the way they lost and the same old mistakes, the punt blocks, all those things that have been killing them this year. They have 4 punts blocked already this year. Just all of that combined, you know, I think he needed a win, right? He needed to have 2 wins before they got out of the pit game this week. And it just wasn't going to happen. They don't look noticeably better. They're moving the ball better. The defense is playing better, but it's the same old mistakes.
When you say same old mistakes, 8 penalties, a block punt, 2 missed field goals, 0 for 5 in the red zone, 0 for 3 on fourth down. Let's go to that block punt. You'd already mentioned that. Am I correct? Like, Jeff Collins, a lot of staffs, you either have a special teams coordinator or sometimes they divvy up each phase of special teams to different coaches. Am I right? Collins is in charge of punt block, right? Or punt protection.
Yeah. So Collins does the punt, or did the punt protection. Let me correct myself there. And every week he would coach it himself. And it's sort of amazing to me that they couldn't figure that out. And what was ironic about it is that was not a problem really in the past. They had 1, I think, in 2 of the seasons, but like that's, you know, fairly normal. They jumped to 4. They were having blocked field goals before that. So it's just been these combo of errors of consistently, you know, Coach Collins talked about attention to detail, right? Like that was one of his buzzwords. And it was clear that was where the failure was lying on a lot of this stuff. Guys not lining up right, guys not counting correctly, which is what you have to do on punt protection. Literally just point count across the line of who you're blocking. They couldn't even get that off. And, you know, that's a coaching thing, right? Like it's not a player skill thing. It's not anything else. And not having other options at punter if you think he's too slow, all of those things are on coaching.
All right, let's talk about I had a question, and I didn't want – like Chris Winkie came on board in this offseason, right? And Chip Lindsey, right?
Chip Long, yeah.
Or Chip Long, yeah. So there were two – just out of several coaches who came on, I just picked two. Chris Winkie has a Heisman, for gosh sakes, and an NFL pension. He knows 100 times more about football than I do, and so I was loath to question this. But honestly, Kelly, I looked at this, and I'm like, what kind of assistant coach right now is joining this staff? I saw Marco Coleman, former Tech player, he got out. Tashard Choice, former Tech, he left. When I saw who was leaving, I started to question, really, who would take that job. They couldn't have been surprised by this, correct? I mean, all these, like, there were 4 or 5 new coaches who came on.
No, they all knew what they were getting into. I mean, Chris, I think, was at IMG. He had been kind of bounced out after the Pruitt thing blew up at Tennessee where he was on staff. You know, Chip Long was at Tulane. He's friends with Brent and Winkie, and Brent Key and all those guys are friends. And I think Brent Key kind of convinced them to come and try to help fix it because Brent loves Georgia Tech and wanted to at least fix it. Now Brent, you know, is going to be the interim head coach, and he has his guys there. So it'll be interesting to see, too, like how that all works with, you know, sort of his buddies and him running the show. Can they fix things that quickly to audition himself to backdoor a Georgia O'Leary situation? I would be surprised if that happened, but it would be pretty Georgia Tech-esque if somehow Brent Key like got them to limp them to a bowl game, and then you're in a dilemma situation, really an inflection point for the program, right? Because college football is changing every day. You have to be competitive, and Georgia Tech went from being consistently competitive really since Bill Lewis got fired to not at all. right? The last almost four years now.
Oh, so, and I've lived in Georgia since I was a 1975. Before school, I was even in school. This is the biggest gulf between Tech and Georgia in my lifetime. And the truth is, Kelly, Georgia Tech right now, you can't even look towards Athens. Y'all aren't doing the same thing right now. It's not even a talking point, the Georgia-Georgia Tech rivalry and where that is.
No, they would need to win the bad Coastal first, right? Like, I think the Coastal was 1-6 this weekend. The one win was Pitt over Rhode Island. Like, this is the worst their division has ever been since they went to divisions, and Jeff Collins can't win in that. So, like, it goes to show, like, how far off they are now, of course. And Georgia's a juggernaut, right? It's them and Alabama right now in college football. Like, they're the two best teams. And then everyone else kind of falls in place behind them. And so, the gulf's widened, as you talked about, and it's getting wider every day. And the only way to fix that is to invest in your program. And it's going to be a long climb out of that, just to be competitive again with them, whereas you had Paul Johnson beat them three times in whatever, 11, 12 years, whatever it was. Yep. Like, that's a long gone thing at this point to me. Like, the game's changed so much in the couple years since Paul Johnson retired. Like, and then, you know, Georgia Tech made a mistake and at the worst possible time, and now they're paying for it, and it's going to be really hard to get out of it.
Last question about this exiting situation. Tight ends coach, was it Chris Wiesen?
Chris Wiesen.
Wiesen, okay. Went back to Temple to coach offensive line. Is there a context? Is there a story there? Because I remember, like, when Doug Nussmeier, quote, decided to leave Alabama to go take the same position at Michigan, I was like, no, he didn't. You don't leave an ACC school to go coach at Temple in downtown Philadelphia. You just don't do it. Was there a story there? Was he just wanting to get back home?
Some of it was him. He liked Temple. His family was really happy there. I think there was some friction between, you know, Wiesen and some of the offensive coach. Chip Long's, you know, an intense guy. You had Winky come in. Well, they hired Winky to replace him, but you had Chip Long and Brent Key, who were buddies, kind of these intense guys. I just think it wasn't a fit for him. Okay. And I still stay in touch with Chris. I know him pretty well. He's a good dude. But it just seemed like he read the writing on the wall, I think, too, man. Like, that's why these guys left. They had, you know, whatever it was, seven position assistants leave. Three got fired and the rest left on their own, right? So I think, you know, a lot of people saw the direction the ship was heading, everyone except for Todd Stansberry, apparently, and jumped off of it.
All right, let's talk about where they go, because here is my opinion. And I ain't trying to be negative. I'm also not a Tech fan. I think I'm just observing. Like, Lance Leipold gets mentioned because he's at Kansas and he's not making anything. I'm like, no, 2 years ago when he's at Buffalo, you could have gotten him. You can't get him now. I mean,
they just gave him a new deal, too, so he's not going anywhere.
No, and, you know, Deion Sanders, I was like, Deion has just to sound brutal about it, Kelly, is the coaches that I'm seeing, and it's free to put stuff on the internet, but the coaches I'm seeing talked about, either you can't get them or they're going to have way better options.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with Deion, right? Like, Deion is going to be a commodity. My issue with Deion at Georgia Tech, and I've explained this to people pushing this, like even boosters I talked to, he's winning in the Florida State formula where they have elite athletes better than people in their league. You're never going to have that Georgia Tech. You got to coach dudes up. Can he do that? So that's the math equation there. I think they need to find, like, somebody very steady and take a chance on, whether it's Jamie Chadwell from Coastal Carolina or some other similar, Mike Houston, whoever it is, like, or you go get a up-and-coming assistant coach and you give them their first shot, someone with a really great plan. I just cannot see rolling the dice on some guy because he's popular with, you know, as a recruiter or whatever. They just went down that road. Like, I think you have to go down the road of who's going to build this block by block. Look at what Mike Elko's doing at Duke, right? Like, he's getting his kids to play hard every week. They have barely any talent on that team, and they're winning games because they play hard for the coach. And that was the biggest thing that I've seen missing at Georgia Tech. You'd have guys play hard, but some guys didn't seem to be, like, Jeff Collins, for whatever reason, could not get that together and get them organized to do that. And I think that's what you got to find now, because there is a decent amount of talent, at least relative to the other teams in the Coastal there. They should be winning the Coastal or competing for it every year like they did with Paul and even with Chan Gailey. like that's not a high bar to me, getting to a bowl game and being in that mix. So they've got to nail this, though, and I think the AD hire is more important than the coach.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's a whole other ball of worms.
Kelly, appreciate it as always, brother. I'm sure that the online interaction with the fan base is going to be hopping today.
Yes.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right, folks, Brian Hartline. I got a text this morning. It says he's a tech grad, and he's not in – he works in computer – he's a network something or other. Like, people call him from all over the world and say, your software's not working, and so he fixes it. What about Brian Hartline? I was like, are you – huh? Brian Hartline. What has Brian Hartline seen every day of his coaching career? And his playing career. What is he looks around, he's like, hey, this is Ohio State. There is a certain way it looks to Brian Hartline. That ain't how it looks down on North Avenue in downtown Atlanta. So you have to understand what somebody is coming from and what they would – like Todd Monken. Do we all know who Todd Monken is? Georgia offensive coordinator? Going from what it looks like every day in Athens to what it looks like at Georgia Tech right now? Now, here is the big caveat. It looks different because now I'm sitting at the end of the table, not on the side of the table. I have talked about that time and again. I've actually been in a couple of those meetings where yesterday I sat on the side of the table. Today I'm still on the side of the table. New guy's at the end of the table. And everybody's just looking at him. All right, what do we do? We're all here. What's your plan? There's something about sitting at the end of the table. And I'm going to say, gosh, I can't believe I'm saying this. They won a national – David, what year were you born?
93.
They almost won a national championship during your lifetime, David. 1990. Like, this isn't ancient Civil War stuff. Todd Monken, he looks at what's going on at Georgia Tech right now. The appeal – to have the big whistle and to be able to look around and know that in spite of everything going on, y'all got to wait on me. All right, we're going to do it my way. Was that, Dan, was that Hugh Jackson? Was he the Cleveland coach on Hard Knocks when he was looking around and he told everybody, my team, my offense, going to do things my way, and then like 3 weeks later he got fired. But when you're the head coach – folks, you want a pink, it's pink. That is whatever it is. You're the head coach. And that really appeals to some guys. And even Les Miles was a national champion. Now, Les Miles was out of a job. Les Miles had gotten a movie role. Didn't he play like somebody at Mission Command in Houston? He was, yeah. And was on a commercial drinking grass. And then Kansas called. Folks, that was a cash grab. So that's not what I'm talking, at least for Georgia Tech, I hope that's not what it is. That's not where they go. But I always, like Arizona State, we talked about them last week because of whom they may come get. Georgia, I always say these often, you know, why are we talking about Syracuse? Well, first of all, Syracuse is not firing their coach now. They won again. They're 4-0, right? Yeah. So when there are openings like this, Minnesota's got an opening. Why are we talking about? Because they may come for your coach instead. They went for Western Michigan's coach. Georgia Tech, you don't have to be from here to win in the South. I mean, Nick Saban isn't from here. Urban Meyer wasn't from here. Kirby Smart is. You don't have to be. It helps. But Georgia Tech, it's not just who do they want to hire, it's who can they get to take the job. And you're not supposed to talk that way about an ACC head coaching job, especially one that has won a national championship during your almost during your lifetime, for some of you, during your lifetime. It is just an absolute low, rock bottom, dry as a bone point for the entire Georgia Tech program.
to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Noah Young on the left. Faked it to Shipley. He throws to the end zone. Caught! Davis Allen. There was plenty of hand fighting in the end zone with Mustafa in coverage. Allen, another touchdown catch.
That's Sean McDonough. That's ABC, right? Did he work for Blackledge? I get this right sometimes. Like, I know all of these voices. I never actually, I don't pick them out as well as most people. Yeah, it's McDonough, though. And that absolutely was the one of the huge plays from DJU to Davis Allen, tight end. Good-looking athletic tight end, man. Who's that, Bo Collins? Did you watch that game, Dan? My goodness. All right, can I tell people, I'm going to take like 10 seconds to tell you my how I unfold my Saturdays. I usually will start with a game that I anticipate being able to drop out of so that by the time it gets to halftime, I will go back to the actual real game I want to watch on the DVR. So that way all the delays and the reviews and everything, and I get that thing through by about 3:30. Start the second game that I'm planning on dropping out at. Like, NC State played UConn the other night. I didn't need to watch all the game. I wanted to watch half the game. I wanted to watch the first half of the game when Devin Leary was in and everybody else. And so that's how I do it. I will have to admit, Missouri-Auburn, Dan, it had to go to the shelf. I did not deem Missouri-Auburn as important as Wake Clemson. A fair assessment on my part? All right. And Auburn won. And my gosh, what did you watch Auburn, Missouri at all, Dan? You're okay if you didn't.
No, I did in, let's just say, shock and awe at the end. For good reasons.
No. When Auburn missed a field goal and then got another shot and then missed it again. And then this Harrison Nevis, middle of the field. It wasn't even an angle. I don't know. I'm barely old enough. If you remember a guy named Mark Mosley, he used to kick for Washington in the NFL. He had a single bar, and I think he was the last straight-on kicker. I would have trotted out somebody from the band. Take two steps forward, move your right foot up. This guy's a good kicker, and he missed it. And then they go to overtime, and Auburn's able to get three. You know, there was no scoring in the second half of regulation there. Auburn gets three, and then that poor Missouri running back, he had the ball in the wrong hand, but he's trying to reach forward, and it didn't get tipped or anything. It just fell. So I was watching Wake and Clemson, and those are two undefeated teams. On the road, Clemson gets that win in overtime, and they had to make plays, and they had to honestly deal with Sam Hartman, who's played as well as he ever has. So they get the win, and just a huge performance. DJU's got 10 touchdown passes now. And Klubnik is not going. Oh, we got Sinkiff coming up, don't we? I want to ask him about Will Shipley. That kid is way, way, way stronger than I realized, man. And he's not. What does leg day for Will Shipley look like? I mean, it's got. What do you do? Like leg press, power cleans, all of that stuff. What a just a strong, strong, compact running back for Clemson. What up, Dan?
I had a Charlie Whitehurst moment, like you yelling, "Snap the ball." Is with the Missouri running back when he was going, and like I saw that the angle was there. I go, get out of bounds. Like, I seriously yelled at the TV, just get out of bounds and live to fight for at least the next four downs. But that's a, you know, coaching moment there that you remember the reaction that Ken Dorsey had yesterday. I think that probably in real time and being up there up in the press box, if Eli Drinkwitz was there, he would have had that reaction.
Oh, yeah,
because it would have just been like, my God, how can you just not have any presence of mind with the football right there and to know? And I love him, too, of, you know, throwing up his hands. No, I was in. No, you weren't in. But that's the unfortunate truth as well is, you know, as we see all these coaching moves being made, I mean, I think that that's a place as well that needs to be looked at right now in Missouri because it just has not gotten off the ground for Eli Drinkwitz. I mean, you know, I understand you get a pretty good recruit in the receiving game this last offseason. But in terms of just the overall team, I mean, I just see a team that just looks pretty unenthused, uninterested, and also, too, there's just no buzz around the program that you need to have if you are going to be at Missouri. If nothing else, at least have some part of your program that has people saying, yeah, it's Missouri, but, man, they do this really well. I mean, with Gary Pinkel, that's what it was. man, it's Missouri, but wow, they've got some athletes. They got Sunday guys on the field. You don't have any of those things right now. There is nothing interesting about your program, and you just showed it on Saturday that that nothing interesting about your program got even worse. And oh, by the way, you want to know what is going to be awaiting them this week?
Yeah.
A nice little get-back game for Georgia.
And then Florida, and then they still have the rest of the East and everybody else, and so it ain't going to be easy.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.